At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free!
There goes Davis!
Oh my God!
Davis is going to run it all the way back!
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in, everyone. It is week two of the college football season as we have just hit record on a new podcast. Moments after Clemson defeated Georgia Tech in a game a little bit misleading by the final score, 41-10. If you laid it with Clemson, hey, congratulations, you'll take the cover if you're like me and laid the first half 13 as one of my plays here on this VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. The pick six would have been nice instead of a field goal, make it 14-3. Not the prettiest game from Clemson. I'm sure we'll hit on that a little bit. But it is your Tuesday morning edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Once again, we really appreciate all the feedback so far. Keep it coming in. Please keep writing those reviews. Give us those five-star reviews. That would be great. Whether you listen on iTunes, you could do a couple comments there, Spotify, wherever you may be listening. But let's keep those numbers keep on going up. We had our first edition of the College Football Line Reveal Show with JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, over the weekend. Of course, we'll have another edition breaking down the full slate of action on Thursday with myself, Tim Murray, and Matt Eumanns. But it is late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, whenever you're taking a listen to this podcast. And let's bring in the one and only Adam Burke, who's got his new article up on the VSiN.com site. Your power ratings have been adjusted. And, you know, very rarely, Adam, are we going to have a game wrap up moments before we hit the air. But that is what we have right now. So let's just do a little instant reaction of what we just saw. Clemson getting the cover. And for those who had the under, oof, that's a tough one, depending on when you got it. I know closing line was 51.5, but most people probably got in around 50.5 or 51. So late touchdown there. The Cade Klubnik hype has already started as he gets in late. Overall impressions of Clemson, who, as of recording, the fourth-ranked team in the country, certainly, at least offensively, Adam, did not look the case whatsoever.
No, they really didn't. And look, you know, they had a couple of big plays on special teams. And you and I were texting back and forth a little bit about what took place in week one. And special teams played a huge role in several different games. A lot of punt blocks, punt returns for touchdowns, kick returns for touchdowns, all that. So some of these teams not really buttoned up on special teams. Look, in the first half, I mean, Clemson didn't look good at all, obviously. And, you know, their offensive line had some issues with the Georgia Tech defensive front, which is not really a great sign going forward for Clemson. But one of the things that separates the really good teams in college football from the teams that aren't as good or the teams that are just outright bad is depth. And Clemson just kind of leaned on Georgia Tech in this game until they put some margin in it. And then, of course, had the short touchdown drive, the 15-yard touchdown drive in the fourth quarter to kind of get within reach of, you know, being able to cover this number. But their depth really showed in the second half. I think the depth for Ohio State, for example, really showed in the second half of that game. Georgia was just great all the way around. Alabama was great all the way around. But I think that's something early on in the year to kind of keep in mind, is that the depth of the elite to very good teams probably shows up in the fourth quarter while everyone's trying to get into game shape.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair way to put it. You know, for Clemson, a couple of block punts helped them out. Their first touchdown drive was aided by a block punt. They go 5 yards and needed four plays. As of recording right now, Cade Klubnik, you know, I know the jokes are out there. I think a couple people at VSiN have a couple long shot tickets on Klubnik to win Heisman, win the Heisman Trophy. They play Furman this week. So if DJ Uiagalelei, you know, struggles in that, you would think it's going to be a long year. But I just didn't really see, you know, the offensive line, as you mentioned, Adam, really struggled. So you can't put it all, I guess, on DJ's plate. But last year it was very uninspiring. They still get the 10 wins based off of the defense. The defense was flying around. That defensive line is something else. But the playmakers aren't there, especially out wide. Will Shipley, I think, is a pretty darn impressive, you know, running back. He's a 5-star. But if you're Dabo and he keeps on saying, you know, DJ's the guy, at some point, I really feel like the Kelly Bryant for Trevor Lawrence situation is coming down the line, especially if Clemson wants to get back to, you know, where they always want to be, which is in the playoff discussion. Right now, based off of a game against Georgia Tech, a team that I personally have an under 3.5 win total ticket on in pocket heading into this year, if that's the way they're going to play, maybe they can win the ACC just off the strength of their defense alone. But man, oh man, that team is not a championship caliber team. I don't know if Klubnik is the guy right now. He's obviously a freshman enrolled early, but that offense, we'll see. You know, it was one drive, but obviously he looked the part. You know, we'll see. But it doesn't feel like DJ's the guy as of right now.
No, it doesn't. And I'll say this for Clemson, though. I mean, I know that we're going to talk about NC State a little bit later on in the show, but not a great look for them against East Carolina. You know, Clemson does have to go to Wake Forest September 24th, which becomes an interesting game here in Winston-Salem. I don't know if Sam Hartman will be back in time for that one. We'll obviously see what Wake Forest looks like in the lead up to that. But, you know, look, I mean, okay, Florida State beat LSU, but LSU was an absolute mess in that game last night. Miami looked great. Miami looked really, really good against Bethune-Cookman. So we'll see what they kind of do going forward. But
we'll learn about them in 2 weeks.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of a silver lining here for Clemson, is it wasn't great, and they still won by 31. And, you know, NC State didn't look great. That's a big October 1st game coming up. The Tigers at least have the luxury of some time to not only figure out, you know, a lot of the things that were ailing this team, but figure out how long DJ remains the quarterback.
Yeah, and if you look at Clemson's schedule, as you kind of alluded to, Wake Forest on the road, but let's be honest, is that going to be a daunting environment? There'll probably be plenty of Clemson fans there. They get NC State at their place. They go to Notre Dame, which doesn't mean anything for the ACC, but if they want to make the playoffs, certainly has some ramifications there. By the way, if you could just bet the under right now, might want to go ahead and do that on Clemson Notre Dame based off what we saw this weekend, and then Miami later on in the month. All right, on VSiN.com, every Monday, you will have your updated power rankings, Adam, and let's jump right into that. We're going to do a little stock up and stock down. You're always going to be adjusting your power ratings and putting that out there and looking at some lines and some early bets that you placed. So we'll take a look at a little stock up, stock down. We'll start with the positive. Stock up. So give me your three biggest risers in your power ratings based off what you saw in week one.
Yeah, so look, I mean, I was really impressed with Duke, and maybe Temple is terrible. And
you know, I don't think you can remove maybe.
Okay, so Temple is terrible. but I'll say this. I mean, Duke was dominant in that game. And that's something that, you know, I wasn't really expecting from the Blue Devils really at any point throughout the course of this season here. But Riley Leonard looked good, 24 of 30, 328 yards, couple touchdowns. He was also the leading rusher with 64 yards on the ground. I mean, they outgained Temple 500 to 179. So I bumped Duke up actually 4 points in my power ratings here. because it looks like they have a quarterback, maybe more importantly, that'll take better care of the football than the guys that they've had the last few years. And also, Mike Elko just might be a hell of a head coach. You know, he's a guy that's been a phenomenal defensive coordinator for a long period of time. He may just end up being a really good head coach. So I gave Duke a pretty big bump from week one to week two here. Missouri is another team that I moved up. And Missouri is a team that I was a little bit low on relative to the market to begin with. So part of this is catching up, but part of it is also, you know, they look good. They've got some guys at the skill positions. I think they're well coached. And that SEC East is, you know, not all that daunting outside of Georgia. I mean, you know, we saw Florida come away with a win against Utah with an interception in the end zone at the end of the game. South Carolina had a very misleading 35-14 win over Georgia State. So I bumped Missouri up a little bit here. I think I was low on them to begin with, but I had to make an adjustment here after this week. And the last one, and I got burned on this one, I played Middle Tennessee, and they got absolutely embarrassed by James Madison. And James Madison, I thought that, you know, offensively, losing Cole Johnson, who had, a 41-4 touchdown interception ratio last year, I figured that would kind of slow them down a little bit. Nope, they ran for 261 yards. They passed for 287. They held Middle Tennessee to 119 yards total in this game. So I bumped James Madison up 3.5 points. I was way too low on them last week, and 3.5, honestly, may not even be a big enough upgrade for the Dukes.
Yeah, Duke plus 4, Missouri plus 4, James Madison plus 3.5. Yeah, very impressive. Getting a shout out too on College Football Final, where the Dukes from good old Harrisonburg, Virginia, good start to their season. I know a lot of people a lot of respected people that I know played the season win total under for the Dukes. So those are your biggest risers. Your biggest drop in your power ratings. Give me the three teams that drop the most.
So I have a few teams that I dropped 3 points, but I have one team that I dropped 5 points, and that's the Charlotte 49ers. So I was actually on FAU this past weekend against Ohio. Now, Florida Atlantic gave up 41 points to the Ohio Bobcats. That was a week after they beat Charlotte 43-13. So clearly Charlotte's not very good. And then they go out and they lose to William and Mary by 17 points at home in a 41-24 game that it was not misleading. There was nothing about that game that, you know, really kind of stood out in an odd or, you know, negative way. They just got beat, and they got beat badly in the fourth quarter, gave up 559 yards to William and Mary. So I moved Charlotte down 5 points, and frankly, that may not even be enough, especially when you look at the line that they've got here for this week in their game. But, you know, some of the teams I moved down 3 points here, you know, I moved LSU down 3 points. I was not impressed with them at all against Florida State. I don't know how the Brian Kelly thing is going to go there. I moved San Diego State down 3 points. They lost outright to Arizona, a team that I was actually high on coming into the year. So I'm happy for that one. I'm on Arizona's season win total over. But San Diego State looked really awful in that game. Jaden DeLora looked great for Arizona. They're a much improved team. But San Diego State got pushed around by Arizona, which is not really something we would have expected to see from the Aztecs. Couple other teams I moved down 3 points. UMass, that's not overly surprising. Utah State, I moved down 3 points. And then also Liberty, I moved down 3 points. I was a little bit high on them anyway, but now Charlie Brewer out for an extended period of time. So a quarterback injury there for Liberty that, you know, probably there's a reason that he won that quarterback competition. And now that he's out, it would be some sort of downgrade to the backup.
Well, I want to get to Charlotte as we jump right into the biggest line move. So once again, every Sunday on VSiN, make sure to check out JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. He'll be reacting right away as soon as Circa opens up the college football market, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. If you missed the show, we will have it part of this feed, and you imagine you saw it pop up on your feed on Sunday. So taking a look at some of the biggest line moves, and Charlotte is one of the biggest line moves. Maryland opened up as a 23-point favorite. It is now 27 at time of record. I didn't catch much of the Maryland game just looking at the box score. Maryland is a team that I played their season win total over 5.5 in the summer. You know, Northwestern looking a little better, especially with their win over Nebraska. We'll see how they play against Duke, another game we'll get to here in just a moment as one of the bigger movers so far. But 23-27 in the market there. We saw, I mean, Hawaii is just an absolute utter disaster. And this is going to be the J.J. McCarthy opportunity to shine. And this game opened up at an eye-opening 46 and hasn't stopped, Adam. It is now up to 51 at Circa, 52 at South Point with a total of 65, which is just insane. But Hawaii is that bad. They got blown out by Western Kentucky, who really didn't look all that good in week number one. I'll rattle through a couple more, and then we can react to them. Stanford against USC, this is interesting. This one opened up 12 in favor of the Trojans at Circa after USC. Pretty darn impressive against Rice. I know it's Rice, but still, but a couple pick sixes helped them out. So the market has moved that one down to 9. So from 12 down to 9. You've seen Alabama against Texas. That thing has gone up. Don't listen to Joey Galloway. It's not going to get the 30, all right? But has moved up from 18 to 20. Northwestern opened 6 at Circa on Sunday, has moved to 9.5. And then a couple smaller ones. Texas Tech, this is interesting. Texas Tech has moved out to a 3-point favorite, which surprises me. I know Houston had some issues against UTSA and fortunate to get out of there with a win. I think Bill Conley pointed out that they probably should have lost that game, I want to say like 30 or 70% of the time. However, Tyler Shuck is hurt and is out for this game for the Red Raiders. So something to keep in mind there. And then the final one I want to mention, UTSA going to Army, and that game has moved from a pick out to 2, and that's a game maybe we'll hit on a little bit later, specifically with some maybe letdown spots there. But with these moves, anything surprise you? Anything makes sense to you? What jumps out to you as some of the bigger moves from the Circa openers on Sunday to where we sit right now, which is late Monday night?
Well, something that jumps out to me a little bit here is that my power ratings were largely on the opening numbers that came from Circa. So I had Michigan Hawaii at 44.5. I had, you know, Charlotte and Maryland at 22.5. And as you said, it was 23 and then wound up getting pushed out. So I'm pretty happy about that, because if you do power ratings, you really want to grade the efficiency of them kind of based on where the opening number comes out. And then if the game moves, you hope it moves towards your number. So opening where I kind of had these numbers and then moving actually makes me feel like I'm in a pretty good spot with them, because now I can take a look at, you know, Maryland, Charlotte and go, okay, I adjusted Charlotte 5 points. That probably wasn't enough. So then I know that it's Charlotte's power rating that I have incorrect right now, as opposed to Maryland's. So that's something that does kind of help me a little bit long term, but also I think it kind of shows the impact that overreaction can have. Because, yeah, Charlotte's looked really bad in back-to-back games. They've looked absolutely terrible. So I adjusted them properly, but then the game line went ahead and ran out anyway. So that's a sign of people looking at Charlotte's 2 data points and saying, you know what, this is one of the worst teams in college football. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not, but because of the 2 examples that we have from them so far, that line winds up running out a little bit. It's the same thing with Hawaii. Hawaii might be one of the 3 or 4 worst teams in the country. I mean, they're a 50-point underdog against Michigan this week, and I think it's even higher than that. It's out to like 52 now.
52, yeah, at South Point, yeah.
And I had that one 44.5, and that was with a significant downgrade back-to-back weeks on Hawaii. So I think we're going to get to a point where some of these teams that have looked really, really bad by maybe even next week or certainly week 4, the value is actually going to be on them. And furthermore, teams that lose to an FCS team early on in the year, like a Charlotte, for example, those are teams people will remember that game all season long. They won't remember anything else that that team does. They're going to go, oh yeah, that's the team that lost to William and Mary. And they're going to carry that shadow around all season long, to the point where middle of the season, late in the season, those teams may actually have value to bet on. So maybe not right now, but file them away for the future, because if they kind of get back on track a little bit, you may be able to cash some tickets on teams like that.
All right, noted Navy, who lost to Delaware over the weekend. The Fighting Blue Hens went into Annapolis and won that one. There's going to be not a lot of people taking the points with the Mids on Saturday afternoon in Annapolis when Memphis rolls the town. Memphis, who, by the way, got their ass kicked by Mississippi State, granted in a revenge spot. So, that's a good point. You know, I've certainly, you bring up, like, well, they lost to this FCS team. And that brings us to a really intriguing game this week. I don't want to say it's a, you know, and we're going to do a lot of G5 games and midweek games and do kind of the full card on Thursday when Matt Eumanns joins the pod. But I know this is a game that you have, I think you see some value on the power rating on Thursday's show. The only pick that I got right of my selections, because somehow Clemson didn't have a pick six to make it 21-0 and dropped it, and Georgia Tech would end up making a 45-yard field goal, because why wouldn't they with a guy who's 1-for-7 in his career for making field goals? But it was South Dakota State keeping things close against Iowa. And I'm telling you right now, Adam, the world is going to be on the Cyclones in this spot. It's that beautiful number of 3.5, and they're going to want to grab the candy with the road team with a low total. I totally get it. Is this a spot to stay away, to maybe jump on the Cyclones? So Iowa State right now, as of recording, is a 3.5-point road underdog at Iowa. Iowa, who, of course, just won a football game with a field goal and two safeties against South Dakota State. People remember that, and they're going to take the Cyclones. Is this a spot to maybe buy low on the Hawkeyes?
You know, it's funny. Last year, I was contributing a little bit to the New York Post via VSiN, and I talked about Iowa, and I talked about all their – I called it basically turnover luck. I was like, look, mm-hmm. I mean, they have an inordinate number of interceptions, and I got, like, hate tweets for days for criticizing Iowa. So I almost made a tweet during the game on Saturday of, like, I'm glad they got the second safety, because now if you just look at the score, it looks like they actually scored a touchdown.
It's such a less fun score, 7-3. But those who know, know, okay? Those, it's not 6-4. What was that? Penn State, Iowa, you know, I think like 17, 18 years ago. It's 7-3. So boring. But we, those who know, by the way, the best part about this weekend was the fact that on this podcast, I gave out three best bets. It was Clemson first half, which didn't come home. It was South Dakota State, anything north of 2 touchdowns, which the market was available there for a good chunk. So we got that. And at the same time, while I'm watching this horrifying game, Adam, going on, I'm keeping my other television on, Appalachian State and UNC, because I had the boys from Boone on the money line at the time of record on Thursday at even money, and they end up going a 3-point favorite. They, of course, lose in just amazing, amazing fashion. So only college football, and that's why we love this sport so much. Can you have a game 7-3 with no touchdowns and a game 63-61 in regulation?
So we'll get back to Iowa State and Iowa in a minute, but I want to ask you this. Over under 0.5, so basically a yes-no prop. App State scored 40 points in the fourth quarter of that game against North Carolina. Does Iowa score 40 points in a game this season?
No.
Okay. No. I agree with you. I would juice the no. I would juice the no probably minus 140.
And yet they'll still be 9-3 and in the, you know, Citrus Bowl. You know, they'll have a good year, I'm sure.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure they will.
Because they always do.
And I'll say this. You talk about the Cy-Hawk Trophy rivalry game here. They've won 6 in a row over Iowa State. And I don't want to say this is the weakest Iowa State team in that span, because the early ones, you know, kind of before Matt Campbell got everything established, were really not very good. But, I mean, Iowa State lost a lot from last season. We didn't learn much about them in week one. They played Southeast Missouri State. They won 42-10. Hunter Deckers looked good. Xavier Hutchinson looked like he was uncoverable. So maybe that'll be something that helps the Cyclones here in this one. I have this game power rated at 4, so I don't really have any value one way or the other in terms of the spread. It may take 2 games for these teams to get over 41.5, so maybe that's something you want to take a look at. But I do think it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens with the market for this one, because as you said, I could see public sentiment being on Iowa State, you know, the whole 6-time revenge angle, Iowa not looking good last week, but, you know, Iowa is just... They're so much I feel like they're so much more of a proven commodity, particularly in this rivalry, that I wouldn't be totally shocked to see sharp money kind of take this to 4, 4.5. Maybe you could buy back at that point with the low scoring expectation, but I think this may be, you know, sort of that that pros versus Joes type of game that we oftentimes get in college football.
Yeah, and this is definitely one of those games where I could see myself, you know, gouging my eyeballs out and taking Iowa, because that's just what I do. Because why wouldn't I want to be on a team who scored 7 points and
with two safeties
and a field goal? Hey, by the way, football season is the best time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Get access to our hourly pro tips, best bets from VSiN experts, including Mr. Burke there. He has plenty of articles up, power rankings, and expanded digital content and tools to help you become a better. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you have to go. So a thing that we're going to do, Adam, and you write an article about it, and I will absolutely have a segment on it every Tuesday on VSiN Primetime with myself and Sean King. I love looking at letdown spots. College football is such a – it's not professional football, even though the money would indicate, you know, and especially in television, that we're kind of getting there. So I want to do a thing on this podcast just to kind of talk out some possible letdown opportunities or even look ahead opportunities. You know, last week we talked about on this podcast about the possibility of Iowa overlooking South Dakota State, an FCS team, kind of a, you know, lazy noon game. You got the rivalry next week. Are you going to be amped up for South Dakota State? Maybe they were, but they, you know, didn't show it offensively. So we'll hit some look ahead spots. I want to do some, I'm going to throw some letdown spots at you and you tell me what you think. I think UT San Antonio, hell of an effort. Frank Harris was phenomenal. They blew the lead to Houston. They're at home. I actually, not on this podcast, so it doesn't count for a record or anything, but I ended up taking a little bit with UTSA because I felt like the public was all over Houston and that line was going in the other direction. So you get a 3-overtime loss to Houston, possible letdown spot there. And then I think you get the look-ahead angle thrown in because in week 3, they get an opportunity to go to Austin to take on Texas. So what do they have in between? Just a trip to West Point, New York. Noon Eastern, 11 o'clock Central start against the Army Black Knights, who went down to Coastal Carolina, lost 38-28. Very bizarre game, by the way. Army only had 11 first downs in that game, had 3 explosive touchdowns of 70, 54, and 73 yards. UTSA, once again, probably should have won the game, outgained Houston by over 100 yards. Is this a letdown spot and a possibility to grab Army as a home dog right now as a 2-point underdog?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a really excellent point. You mentioned that one to me earlier. By the way, I wish I would have played that over in Army and Coastal Carolina like I talked about. That game kind of played out to my expectation. Coastal was quite efficient on offense. Army had some big plays as Coastal kind of got adjusted to defending that triple option. And that's kind of the crux of the argument here for this UTSA and Army game is – you know, you probably didn't work in a whole lot of option prep when you're trying to beat Houston, when you're playing one of those big brother, little brother types of games, specifically when big brother comes to you. That's definitely a game that you're really amped for, really focused on. You're not focused on playing Army, and facing that triple option is a very, very challenging thing to do. Not only that, I think something else for UTSA that may get overlooked a little bit here. So Houston had the ball for over 35 minutes in regulation. Houston's final scoring drive took over 10.5 minutes. It was an 18-play, 77-yard drive, their final drive in regulation. So UTSA's defense got a real big workout on a very warm day in San Antonio. Now they're going to have to go and play Army, where Army's probably going to have the ball for 34 minutes, run 65 rushing plays or whatever it's going to be. This is a miserable spot for UTSA. And frankly, I actually have Army from a power rating standpoint favored by 2.5 in this game. So I could make an argument, and a fairly strong one at that, that the wrong team is favored here in this game.
Yeah, I could definitely see myself backing Army here in this spot. But by the way, props to you on Coastal. I was lower on Coastal than you were. They looked really solid in their opener. 38 points, 30 first downs. outgained Army. Impressive performance by Coastal. Getting them in the right time, though. You're getting week one, all that time to prepare. Another letdown spot in my eyes. North Carolina goes on the road. Obviously, the epic game that was discussed, you know, every which way. I was on the wrong side, unfortunately. Just if Chase Bryce can just throw a little less touch on that two-point conversion, I think I get it home. But you never know. I mean, who the hell knows? Maybe May brings him down for a game-winning field goal. But now North Carolina goes on the road to Georgia State. I know a team that has piqued your interest, Adam. This is actually seeing some smart money come in, maybe a little buyback. So it opened 9 at Circa in favor of UNC, went down to 7. Now you're starting to see a little buyback, 7.5s, 8s out there. I think this is a tricky spot for North Carolina off that 63-61 game. They've got a bye week next week, so maybe not a look-ahead spot, but I certainly could see this as a letdown spot, and what an opportunity for Georgia State to get UNC to come to their spot. I know we said the same thing last week, but is this a letdown spot for UNC going to the Georgia State Panthers?
You know, I think it could be. I think I would probably look more first quarter or first half here, because I think North Carolina, despite their defensive concerns, and obviously there are plenty of them, given what we saw in that game against App State, Drake May looked really good. I mean, he looked extremely good. He didn't look like a drop-off at all from Sam Howell from what we saw last year. One thing I think is really interesting, though, about this game, and I want people to keep this in mind, I lobbied to write a misleading box scores piece again this season like I did last year, but we got a lot of other content going on throughout the week at vsin.com. I go through and I study the box scores before making adjustments to my power ratings because I want to see why a game played out the way that it did. So this Georgia State South Carolina game looks like South Carolina took care of their affairs. They did what they were supposed to do, yada, yada. Look, South Carolina got outgained 311 to 306. They had 2 punt blocks returned for touchdowns in this game. So this was effectively a 21-14 game, which would have allowed Georgia State to cover the spread. I think it closed around 13, something like that. But this is a really important thing. Early on in the week, Sunday night when lines get posted into Monday, teams that lost in misleading fashion or teams that won in misleading fashion, there will be line moves on those teams. And that was the first wave of money that we saw for this game was actually on Georgia State, because they held South Carolina to 4.4 yards per play. They outgained the Gamecocks. They ran for 200 yards against an SEC defense, and they lost the game by 21. So it was a very misleading type of score. So we saw some Georgia State money early. Now we've kind of seen some North Carolina buyback. And frankly, look, I think North Carolina ultimately wins and covers here just because I think their offense is just way too powerful for Georgia State. But it's just an interesting thing. If you want to try to grab some line equity early on in the week, look for those misleading results and try to prey on them as those lines start to mature a little bit.
Well, I don't think there's a bigger letdown spot, at least in my opinion, this upcoming week than for a team that you pinpointed on this podcast. You wrote about it on VSiN.com. All the props to you, but might have been a little bit of a misleading box score, and that would be the Old Dominion Monarchs. Getting the win outright over Virginia Tech, got a late touchdown to win that game 20-17. They stormed the field. What a big win. They've had 2 wins over Power 5 teams in their school's history, both against Virginia Tech. And now they turn around and go to East Carolina. I don't love the spot for East Carolina, who just had their hearts ripped out of their chest because of a missed extra point, then got another opportunity to beat NC State and missed the field goal, pushing it right from about 40 yards. We've seen a little bit of money come in, at least to move East Carolina from the open of 13 down to 12.5. But is this a spot to fade Old Dominion, Adam, after a thrilling, and props to you once again, a big upset for the Monarchs over Virginia Tech?
Yeah, it was one of the few things I got right last week, and I had Illinois plus the 3. They pushed, but I don't know how the hell they lost that game. If you look at that box score, Illinois should have won that game and probably would win that game 85-90% of the time. Had FAU on Saturday, that didn't work out. Had Middle Tennessee, hopefully that's the worst bet I make all year. But I did have this one. I did have Old Dominion, and look, turnovers can oftentimes decide games. Virginia Tech had 5 of them. Grant Wells, 4 interceptions in his Hokies debut. Virginia Tech outgained Old Dominion by 95 yards, but they were minus three in turnover margin. Then, of course, gave up that late touchdown that allowed Old Dominion to win the game. It's funny because I texted you on Saturday or on a Sunday. I was like, you know, the team that should have won, East Carolina, didn't. And the team that shouldn't have won, Old Dominion, did. So what do you do with this game? I think when I look at this one, I think 13 is just too big of a number, to be totally honest with you. I mean, I think that there is certainly a letdown factor in play here for Old Dominion. I have this game lined at 11.5, so it's not like it's wildly off market or anything. But I'd almost rather have the team that got lucky and won than the team that had a crack to send it to overtime, then a crack to win it, and didn't convert either one of them. I mean, now you worry about East Carolina in terms of special teams. You worry about if that dictates what Mike Houston does on third and fourth down because he doesn't have a reliable kicker. I actually think this is potentially more of a letdown spot, oddly enough, for the team that lost as opposed to the team that won.
Yeah, I'm staying away from this game. I would have loved to fade Old Dominion this week. No better time. Field rush, you know, they're on cloud nine. They're the talk of the campus, and they beat Virginia Tech, and you know that they're walking around with their chest puffed out, regardless of how the game unfolded, because they got the win. And East Carolina, you could think, well, maybe they're going to be fired up, or sometimes you're just sluggish and you're annoyed and you're pissed that you had an opportunity to beat a top 15 team. You had them, and it's an arch rival in NC State, and they couldn't get it done. So that's why I would have loved to fade Old Dominion. Maybe I can get talked to into it. I want to go back to the UNC App State game.
Let me actually ask you this first. They play Charleston Southern this week, so it's kind of irrelevant. I see WinBet popping numbers for FBS versus FCS games. NC State's a 44.5-point favorite against Charleston Southern. But I think one of the things that's kind of hard to figure out early on in the year is, you know, sort of, I don't want to say assigning blame, but trying to figure out, you know, how legitimate a performance actually is, where in the case of NC State, they didn't look good. Mm-hmm. And East Carolina's, you know, a middling team in the AAC. NC State looked nothing like the team that people expected them to be, calling Devin Leary, you know, kind of a dark horse Heisman candidate. Do you think that we've kind of overhyped NC State, or was that just one of those bad performances that when all is said and done, we're going to look back and go, well, that was maybe their worst game of the year at a you know, weird time.
I said it on this podcast. I said it on, you know, multiple platforms on VSiN. And look, I'm not going to, you know, puff out my chest because I didn't make the pick, you know, for East Carolina to cover. I talked about it. I really wanted to. And then honestly, I kind of backed off a little bit because everybody, lots of people I respect, and who knows, maybe they get there, but you know, to me, Adam, you lose your top two running backs. You lose a top 10 pick to the NFL on your offensive line, and you lose your top receiver. I get it. Devin Leary's back, and they've got a really good defense and pretty much every starter back on defense. I don't know, man. I got to see it first. And, you know, everyone was talking about them to make the playoff, them to win the ACC. Could happen. It's all there out in front of them. But you know, I was always a bit cautious of the overhyped team. You know, look at Utah. They were the overhyped team all offseason. They could still win the Pac-12, but boy, that was a shot to the arm there for them, even though they had an opportunity to win that game and much stiffer competition than what NC State had to play against East Carolina. So, yeah, I was always a bit wary of this NC State hype that was being put out there, but yeah, we'll see moving forward. I know they get Texas Tech in 2 weeks, but like I said, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how big of a drop-off, if it's a drop-off at all, if we go from Taylor Shuck, the Oregon transfer, to Donovan Smith, who, you know, looked pretty darn good, granted against Murray State for Texas Tech, you know, coming in relief.
Yeah, I just, you know, you look at that kind of game, and I mean, look, East Carolina only scored 20 points with almost 400 yards of offense, so they had chances. They had plenty of them. And you wonder for NC State, you know, was it just kind of everybody trying to gel a little bit, or is there something more to this? I mean, you probably shouldn't go 4-for-13 against an AAC defense on third down. You know, you should definitely, I mean, they got very fortunate. They had a special teams touchdown as well. You know, special teams playing such a huge role in these week one games, as I mentioned at the top, but I mean, they scored 14 offensive points in this game, and they only sustained a couple of really long drives to get them. So, you really wonder if you know, and I didn't really adjust NC State that much in my power ratings. I don't want to overreact to one performance, but that may be something I have to take a deeper look at here heading into week three, even though we won't find out much against Charleston Southern this week.
All right, I want to bang through a couple more letdown spots, a couple look-ahead spots, and then any bets that you've already placed. So we'll try to rifle through these. I'll fire them your way, and we'll see. Notre Dame, are they in a letdown spot after losing to Ohio State the fashion that they did? It's Marcus Freeman's debut at Notre Dame Stadium. He talked about how hyped he's going to be. I would actually remove that. Market has moved a little bit towards the Irish against Marshall, who, you know, they'll be without their running back, I think, again. So I think that would be a pass for me on that. How about Syracuse? They absolutely hammered Louisville as a home underdog. Really impressive performance. And now you've got to go to the rent to take on UConn. This line has moved in favor of the Cuse. Not a surprise, but I don't know, man. UConn's coming off a bye week, an opportunity to really prepare here. It's just a weird spot, I feel like, for Syracuse. Actually, no, it wasn't a bye week. They played Central Connecticut State. I apologize. How could I forget that they played the Blue Devils of Central Connecticut State? But just a weird spot for Syracuse, I feel like, going to play a night game at the Rent. They're a 23.5 point favorite. I don't know, man. That's just like one of those weird, I could see them winning by like 17, you know, 31 to 14.
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, shame on you for not propping up Central Connecticut State. Look, I'll say this. I did not expect to say this going into week two here. I've been impressed with UConn. I mean, I really, truly have been. You know, I mean, that game was hanging in the balance for a long time in Logan against Utah State. And if Taquan Roberson doesn't go out, that may have been a really interesting fourth quarter there in that one. Then they do what they're supposed to do against Central Connecticut State. It wasn't exactly pretty, but they did ultimately get there and cover the number. This team, they look like a football team. And I don't know if we're just throwing a bone here to our program director, John Goulet, by talking about his UConn Huskies, but they look like a football team. The running game has been pretty decent. That's another one, you know, that Syracuse-Louisville, though. Again, it's kind of, well, is Louisville not very good? Is Syracuse a lot better than I thought? Garrett Schrader played really, really well. I think I saw Pro Football Focus. I think I saw Pro Football Focus said he was their highest graded Power 5 quarterback in week one. I mean, maybe Syracuse is decent, but 22, you know, plus is a big ask here in this one. I have this game lined at 22, so it's virtually right on my number, but I wouldn't want to be holding a Syracuse ticket asking them to win by four scores here.
Well, and you know, as I always love the schedule, look at it. I don't know if Syracuse is grinding their teeth and drooling from the mouth, but they got Purdue coming in next week. I mean, it's an interesting game coming to whatever they call the Carrier Dome nowadays, noon start time there. So I don't know. It just seems like a weird spot. UConn at home, night game, you know, it'll be 1,200 strong there at the Rent, you know, getting fired up for this one. All right, a couple of look ahead spots. Because we're running long, as we probably will tend to do. I picked out three games as possible look-ahead spots. Miami laying 26 against Southern Miss. They have Texas A&M the following week. A game we didn't mention was Texas A&M Appalachian State. Is this a spot where App State is out of gas and just gets smoked by Texas A&M getting 17?
I was going to say we could probably hold off on this one, but I did go ahead and fire on the minus 17 here with Texas A&M, even though I think there's a chance this line could come down a little bit. I've got it 16.5. I mean, App State just scored 61 points last week against North Carolina, but how the hell does App State get ready for this game? I mean, the manner in which they lost to North Carolina, now they go to College Station with over 100,000 people. It's going to be 90 degrees and humid. I think App State just completely runs out of gas in the second half of this game. And also, while Chase Brice played really well against North Carolina, most of all, you know, having to play kind of catch up and throwing the ball a lot more than he's used to, this is a team that has to run the football to be successful. It's not easy to run against Texas A&M. This feels to me like a 31-7, 38-10 type of Texas A&M win where they really pull away late in the game. Even though, you know, they've got a big game coming up in week three that I know you're going to talk about, but I just think they're going to be too big and too strong for App State in about the worst possible spot for the Mountaineers.
Yeah, so Miami gets Southern Miss. Are they looking ahead to Texas A&M week three? How about Nebraska? They haven't looked impressive at all this year, so maybe they don't have the ability to look ahead to anybody, but they're laying 21 against the mighty Clay Heltons of Georgia Southern. I know a team that you were looking to fade quite a bit this year. But you got Oklahoma waiting in the wings there to come into Lincoln. That's a big noon kickoff game. Obviously, we know the importance of that rivalry. And then one final one, Penn State and Auburn. They play week three down in Auburn. Penn State is laying 24.5 at home against Ohio, and Auburn is laying 22.5 against San Jose State, who was lucky to get out of what, Thursday night against Portland State with a win over them. So anything in possible look ahead spots, Auburn, Penn State, Nebraska, and Miami. This weekend, all laying north of 20.
Yeah, those are all really big numbers. Maybe Nebraska found something in the second half against North Dakota, because that was a 17-17 game going into the third quarter, and then they kind of figured it out. They sort of ironed out some of their issues. Before we get excited about Georgia Southern, who I'm very heavy on their season win total under, so let's hope that comes through. But Georgia Southern in that game against Morgan State had scoring drives of 6, 36, 16, 38, and 38 yards. So they just had a bunch of short fields against a really awful Morgan State team. So don't get too excited about the 59 points that Georgia Southern hung in that one. But no, I'm not laying 22 with Nebraska, I can tell you that. I'm not laying 22 with Auburn either. I don't think Brian Harsin's really that good of a coach, to be totally honest with you. So not really looking forward to, you know, following too much about Auburn football here for this season. An easy win over Mercer last week, but you know, it's Mercer, kind of is what it is. And, you know, it's really challenging to lay some of these big numbers, but at the same time, now teams have a game under their belts, right? So now they kind of know what they need to work on. If they're well coached, then, you know, you would think that they kind of iron some things out going from the first game to the second game. So maybe some of these teams that didn't look all that impressive, maybe kind of figure things out a little bit into week two. The one thing I'll say about Penn State laying a giant number here is, you know, Sean Clifford temporarily left that game last week against Purdue. Yet again, when he's not 100%, he is not at all the same quarterback. So that's something I would kind of look at there. Where I was thoroughly impressed with Ohio last week. As I mentioned, I was on FAU. Ohio scored 41. They were in control of that game and let Florida Atlantic back into it. But the thing for Ohio, you got to remember, and this is something that maybe I didn't account for enough in my handicap last week, Frank Solich retired shortly before the season started, and he had been the coach there for like a million years. So they had a big shuffle with their coaching staff, and it seemed like they never really got into rhythm. They were in rhythm in week one, so they could keep that one interesting at least for a little while there in Happy Valley.
Yeah, and once again, looking ahead, possibility. I think Auburn, that intrigues me. San Jose State, very disappointing in their performance against Portland State. We'll see if they can put it together, get amped up for an Auburn game. Weekday-wise, no games on Thursday with the NFL season starting. Do have Louisville at UCF. This number has now moved to 6 or 6.5. Is this an overreaction to the Louisville dud of a performance against Syracuse? UCF played South Carolina State. Other than the world's worst punt where the kid was seven yards over the line of scrimmage and punted it away from South Carolina State. Other than that, really, you know, nothing too much to speak home about. I have the season one total over for UCF, so I really need this win. This would be nice. I like the rest advantage that they have. But is this an overreaction now that we're looking at 6.5 and maybe on our way to 7 in favor of the Golden Knights?
You know, I've kind of been wondering that same thing. I mean, my line is 6.5 here, so I'm pretty much in line with the market, which, again, makes me feel pretty good about where my power ratings are at right now. John Rhys Plumlee was a very good dual threat in that game against South Carolina State, but obviously, you know, you don't want to take too much away from that UCF performance. The thing for Louisville is, I mean, it's Malik Cunningham, and then what? You know, I mean, that guy, he's a dual threat guy. He's got to do pretty much everything for this offense. And you sort of wonder what he's able to do here against the UCF team that, you know, again, I mean, they're getting a Power 5 team at home. They have a very good home field advantage there at the Bounce House. And I feel like I'd be on UCF or nothing here. And I don't have a play on this game as of yet, but it does look like it's got the chance to go to 7. So if you do like UCF here, I think you kind of want to grab this 6.5, and then maybe you can sort of decide if you want to hold it, if you want to buy off of it, what you want to do, because I think 7 will be coming here. Who knows? Possibly by the time our show gets out there.
Yeah, I agree. There's a couple sixes out there too, still available. Boise State, real quickly, on Friday night as well, they go to New Mexico. Good Lord, they got their butts whipped by Oregon State. And I know Matt Newman's and some others really liked Oregon State. Boise State in that spot. Brad Powers, I believe, as well. So some guys that I truly respect on the Broncos in that game, and they got hammered in Corvallis by Oregon State. Is this a bounce back opportunity for the Broncos down in Albuquerque on Friday night?
Well, we'll have to check in with our girl Stormy Bonantoni over at VSIN. She was on the sideline for this game, and I wonder if at field level it looked as bad for Boise State as it looked on TV. I mean, Hank Bachmeier got benched. They had 5 turnovers in the game. Honestly, and Oregon State had 3 turnovers of their own, but they just looked in complete control of this game throughout. Had almost 500 yards of offense. They were very balanced, too. They ran the ball and threw the ball. And frankly, I was down on Boise State coming into the season. It was part of the reason why I liked Air Force so much to win the Mountain West, liked their season win total over. Sort of figured like the years of attrition, particularly in terms of coaching at Boise State, were going to start to catch up with them. And maybe that ends up being the case here. My number on this game, though, is Boise State minus 20.5. So even though I'm low on the Broncos, I still have a little bit of power ratings value on them. I don't really think much of New Mexico, and it's hard to say much about New Mexico coming off of their win against Maine. But I do have a little bit of power ratings value on Boise State here. The question is, you know, will it be Bachmeier? Will it be Green? Can they figure things out here on a short week after looking so bad against Oregon State? It's a tough bet to make. I think Boise State probably ends up being the right side, but I don't know if I can take it.
All right, couple final notes here. BYU hosts Baylor. Both these teams a breeze in their opener. BYU, I think first play of the game from the line of scrimmage, went to the house against South Florida. Shout out to my co-host, Sean King, a little jab at him. I'll enjoy that cigar as BYU just absolutely squashed South Florida 50-21. And then Baylor played Albany. I don't know what you can glean from that. They went 69-10. But something that you pointed out, these two teams did meet last year in Waco. It was a mid-October game. Baylor won by 14 and was a favorite. Now we're looking at 11 months later, and BYU is laying 3.5. I see a 4 at there at circa at time of recording. This is quite the adjustment in a line over 11-month stretch.
This is a massive adjustment, and my line's BYU minus 2 here, and I was very high on BYU last week. I had them a 16-point favorite against UCF, played the first half, didn't play the full game. I was kind of worried about them maybe wearing down in the heat and humidity of Tampa. But I got to say, I know people are going to say, well, it was South Florida. This game was delayed 2.5 hours because of weather, and BYU goes 75 on the first play. They lead this game 38-0 just before halftime. That's really impressive from the Cougars, to where they could have been, you know, kind of hypnotized a little bit with that long weather delay and all that. They were not. They just kind of took it in stride. So I give them a lot of credit for that. I was a little bit higher in the market on Baylor, so I kind of lean that way here, but I'm going to wait and see how long this line keeps running out, because BYU was so impressive, because there are some people that I've even heard, I think, I want to say Matt Brown maybe took a flyer on Jaren Hall to be the first overall pick on the upcoming draft. And Matt, I apologize if I'm butchering that, but I think I remember that from over the summer. So there's a lot of hype with this BYU team, and I don't really see the same for Baylor, but damn, Baylor's really well coached with Dave Aranda. I think this is a very good team. I don't know if Blake Shapen is the real deal yet, but he beat out Jerry Bohannon for the job. So, you know, the evaluators there in Waco seem to like him. I think I'm ultimately going to end up on Baylor here just from a line value standpoint, because I really do like, honestly, both of these teams. You know, the elevation could be a factor in the second half for Baylor, but like you, I think the biggest storyline here is the 9-point adjustment from Baylor minus 5.5 in Waco, as you said, just 11 months ago.
Well, I think BYU, you know, think about the revenge factor of beating both Baylor quarterbacks, because Jerry Bohannon now, of course, the quarterback of USF. They had to get revenge from last year's game against Baylor because Bohannon started that game, and now a chance to beat Baylor again. So that's part of the late night slate. By the way, this might be one of the best late night slates I've ever seen. Baylor, BYU, Oregon State, Fresno State, Mississippi State, Arizona, all kicking off at 10:15 Eastern or later. All right, Adam, let's wrap it up this way. Anything you fired on already? Ones that intrigue me, Army catching a couple points at home. Maybe that gets out to 3, but I think Army is in a great position to catch UTSA, just in a horrible, horrible situational spot. I agree with your assessment on App State. I think they could just run out of gas after the marathon game there, going down to College Station. And then I'm intrigued by Georgia State, too. So we will see. Back-to-back weeks potentially fading UNC. We'll see if that burns me again. But those are the 3 games initially that have jumped out at me. What's piqued your interest?
So I want to mention real quick, I believe Stormy drew the assignment in Provo of Baylor BYU. So that's a hell of a game to have on your sideline tape. So I think that's the game that she's got, and that's a game that everybody's going to be interested in. You know, with that top 25 battle, and of course, you know, the rematch coming off of last year. In that late window, one of the games that I took already, and I did take it before it moved to double digits, it was 9 on Sunday night, was Mississippi State and Arizona. Big overreaction here to Arizona, I think. Yeah, they look good, but San Diego State, you know, you have the whole Matt Araiza thing, where now the program's under investigation, and then you also have, you know, no quarterback play with the Aztecs whatsoever. So, impressive win for Arizona, but I kind of want to put a little bit of an asterisk next to it. And Mississippi State looked really good in that revenge spot against Memphis. Will Rogers is the perfect quarterback for this Mississippi State system. I still think at 10.5, this number is worth playing. I have this one at 13. So I think 10.5 or 10, I see the 10 out there at South Point as we're recording here on Monday evening. I think Mississippi State is a good play. My biggest overlay of the week is Oklahoma State minus 11 against Arizona State. I have this game at 17.5. So this is a big power ratings difference for me, but it's kind of by design, right? So I thought Spencer Sanders was great. And I thought it was really interesting that Oklahoma State threw the ball all over the yard in that game last week. And it sort of shows the way that Mike Gundy can adapt, because he doesn't have Jim Knowles now. So I think maybe in his mind, he's thinking to himself, okay, we can't just be a ground and pound and win it with defense team anymore. We're going to have to go out there and score. Kind of a throwback to what Oklahoma State used to look like with guys like Brandon Whedon and all that. So I was really impressed with Spencer Sanders in that game last week. And I think that they just completely blow out Arizona State, a team I'm looking to fade, a team I don't trust at all. I don't think Herm Edwards is a good head coach. So those are a couple of the plays that I like. I may also be on Virginia against Illinois. I think 4.5, 5 is just too high for that game. But speaking of lines that are too high, I think this is a really good game for us to kind of end on here. So Tennessee and Pitt, right? So this is a revenge game for Tennessee. They lost at home in Knoxville last year, 41-34. I have this game lined at 3.5, Tim, and it's 6.5 out there. I think this line is just way too high on Tennessee. And I know that there's a lot of hype behind Tennessee, but I don't necessarily get it. I mean, I know that Hendon Hooker's looked really good, but you look at them from last year. I mean, every time they played a decent team, they lost. They lost to Florida by 24. They lost to Pitt. They lost to Ole Miss. They lost to Alabama. They lost to Georgia. Yeah, they beat Kentucky 45-42, but that was coming off of a bye, and it wasn't a good spot for the Wildcats. I just think, and I don't even like Pitt that much, but I just think the hype for Tennessee is just way too big at this point in time. They're a top 10 team in my power ratings, and I think this line is too high. So I'm going to be on Pitt. I'm just waiting for a seven to show up out there in the market.
Yeah, I think you'll get it. I do. I think you'll get that seven. It opened four and has now moved up to seven. Just double checking the openers there. But yeah, this is impressive. Or five, excuse me, open five. So we'll see. I don't disagree. I don't really know if I want to get involved because I do not enjoy Pitt and Narduzzi already complaining about everything. It just it bothers me. And they had no business, in my opinion, at least covering against West Virginia. By the way, just we'll wrap up on this final note. Back on May 26th, I predicted Stormy would have Boise, Oregon State week one and Baylor, BYU week two. She let me know a couple weeks ago that she will be actually at Missouri, Kansas State, unless something's changed, but that was what she let me know. So that'll be her game this week. All right, we have gone long. We're going to get yelled at, but a lot to unpack looking ahead to week two. On this pod, every week, expect us to get an update on Adam's power rankings, which you'll have on Monday every day, every week on VSiN.com. We'll look at some possible letdown spots and some overreactions, the weekday games as well. So we hit on all of those, and we'll try to get you out here a little more tidy, but a lot to hit on today. Once again, follow Adam on Twitter at Skating Tripods. I am at 1 Tim Murray. We will be back on Thursday, myself, Matt Newmans, breaking down the full week two card. We'll also have Adam's official plays as part of that podcast as well. But for Adam Burke, I am Tim Murray. Once again, please subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend, tell lots of friends about the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast with you three times a week in your feed. Until Thursday, see you, folks.